I tried to leave time for the second speaker. No, after Thanksgiving next week I'll be in Bakersfield, and so today I wanted to just take some time. Sometimes we do that with a Bible study format and then a split sermon, so you're not going to have to sit through another full sermon. This will be 3 or 4 minutes shorter. And I have created a PowerPoint, as you can see, and so now that you started getting sleepy through the first message, I've got a way that I can make sure that's on, keep you awake during the second half and what I want to cover today. Well, God is the author of law. Law is something that is there, and there's many different types of laws in force. And in fact, just like there's 7 laws of success, there's 7 laws to prove that God exists. And one of those is the laws that are in force. And God is the author of law. We see laws today when laws of physics. We have the law of gravity. You learn that one early on. And it's a law that you continue to find is there even when you get older. Gravity pulls you down. When you jump off a house with an umbrella, it doesn't work. You find that one out when you're a young child by experience. So laws of physics. There's laws of chemistry. There are the 10 commandments, which are God's law. God's law of love. They'd say, well, the 10 commandments are God's law of love, and they are. But God's love, agape love, goes beyond just the 10 commandments. And there's laws of health. And I want to cover today one of those laws of health, and we'll talk about that now that Thanksgiving is over. Now that we've taken in all of those desserts and all of the turkey and all of those things that go with it. Now, some laws are spiritual in nature, and they have to do with sin. And God is very clear. You break this law, and God's law, God's broken law, is sin. Other laws that are in force are physical, and they deal with well-being or longevity. Just our health laws, things that we should do or should be doing to keep ourselves in good shape. And some have to do with both. Some laws deal with eternal death, and some deal with physical death. Genesis 9, chapter 1. Let's go back to Genesis, because if we're going to look at particular laws of God, Genesis begins at the very beginning talking about his law. So Genesis 9, we're going to look at a particular law that God gave here. And it says, so God blessed Noah and his sons, and he said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The fear of you and the dread of you shall be on every beast of the earth, and every bird of the air, and on those that move on the earth, and on all fish of the sea, and they are given into your hand. Clark commentary says, the fear of you and the dread means prior to the fall of man, they ruled the inferior animals, which with love and kindness and gentleness and docility were their principal characteristics. After the fall, untraceableness and savage ferocity prevailed amongst all those animals in the brute creation, and enmity between man seems to prevail after the fall of man. So here we read that, well, the fear of you and the dread of you shall be on every beast. And no, it's not a split sermon on how we're going to strike fear in the animals. That's not the law that I'm going to talk about. Verse 3 says, every moving thing that lives shall be food for you, and I have given you all things, and even the green herbs. Now, do we blindly accept that without understanding and just look at it and go, okay, God's given us all things to eat? If we read the scripture and look at that, he said, I've given you all things for food. And yet we realize we have to read further. We have to understand what God is saying here. Some claim that this shows we can eat anything and that all plants can be eaten. I've had individuals say every single herb was created by God to be eaten. My first answer is always, can you eat poison ivy? The three-leafed herb or plant. And we realized we absolutely cannot. I had a booth mate in college who worked in landscaping. Ambassador College. And he dug up some poison ivy and got, somehow he got the poison ivy into his bloodstream. I don't know whether he had an open cut, but I came back and he was in the booth shaking in the middle of the summer, all covered up, sweating. So I called our local nurse there, and he came and they took him to the hospital, and he almost died because of poison ivy in his bloodstream, something that I didn't realize could get that bad. Statistics show that there are 20,000 inedible plants in the world. And yet, what did God mean when he said all plants are made for food? Did God proclaim them all good to eat? Or did he say, I've made all the plants and there's something that you can eat? Like the comparison to our automobiles. You know, you have an automobile and it runs on gas. Or it runs on gas and ethanol. Or it runs on whatever particular fuel, diesel. But you have to put that in there. You wouldn't put milk in your tank, because milk's now cheaper than gasoline, and make it run, because you realize, okay, that's going to do something to the engine. It's not going to work right. Now, both are liquid. You could say, well, both are fuel. One's fuel for human beings, and one's fuel for a car. Our bodies run on what we put into them. And so God does make it clear what is good for food and what is not. Even though he said, I've made all of these things, he begins to explain. So today we're going to go over and cover a particular law, a law that God has given, and that is the law of animals, birds, fish, and bugs. The law of animals, birds, fish, and bugs. Did God make everything edible with no restrictions? Well, let's go to Genesis 9 and verse 4. But you shall not eat. Okay, wait a minute. He said, all of this has been given to you to eat, but you shall not eat. And so we have to read further. You shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood. You don't want to eat anything while it's still living, and you don't want to eat anything that has not been bled out. God immediately begins to clarify his statement and make certain restrictions. We're not to eat any flesh. That means body, flesh, skin, that is alive or hasn't been bled out properly. Let me go back a little bit to chapter 7. We're going to look at a particular event that took place. And I'm sure it almost looked exactly like this. This is Noah's Ark. When Noah entered the Ark, he was commanded to take more of the clean animals than the unclean. Were clean and unclean laws simply for Noah? Well, when we read the account of what was taking place, it wasn't simply for Noah. It wasn't simply for the Old Testament. It wasn't just because, well, let me give him something to do to see if he's going to follow me. No, there's very valid reasons why God gave these laws. Genesis chapter 7 and verse 1. Then the Lord said to Noah, come into the ark, and you and your household, because I have seen that the generations that you are righteous before me in your generation. And you shall take with you seven each of every clean animal, male and female, and two each of every animal that are unclean, male and female. Now, several questions arise. We don't see Noah going, what's a clean animal and what's an unclean animal? How did Noah know what was clean and what was unclean? God was commanding him, I want you to take seven of the clean. When the health laws, and most people say, well, those health laws were given later to Israel. Genesis doesn't see the need to clarify or make distinction in what was here. And Noah, it says Noah was righteous, meaning Noah kept the laws of God. And when God said, take the clean and take a certain number of the unclean, he understood. So Genesis chapter 7 verse 5. Noah did according to all that the Lord had commanded him. He didn't ask, okay, show me the difference between clean and unclean. I've been eating everything. He knew what to do. And why seven? Why seven animals? Well, we go down and look at verse 3. He says, also of each of the the fowls of the air by sevens, male and female, to keep them alive upon the face of the entire earth. So he says, I want you to bring seven of the clean animals, and I want you to bring seven of the birds, and then we're going to keep them alive on the face of the earth. So God wanted edible animals, and I don't want that to be a wrong term. He wanted edible animals to be kept in abundance so that they would have food to eat on the ark, but also that they would be in abundance as they began to reestablish. Now, Deuteronomy 14 does go through and list good meats, clean meat, and unclean, but they likely began to enjoy a good steak long before Deuteronomy, before that law was given. Many believe that God's laws of clean and unclean meats began with the children of Israel, and again, we see here, even going back in Genesis. And so for Genesis, it was obvious that these laws already existed of clean and unclean, because when he told Moses, I want you to take seven of the clean, Moses did. And it's just as obvious that the laws of God were enforced long before they were given to Moses and the children of Israel, the Ten Commandments. People say, oh, those Ten Commandments are Moses' law. Well, you look at the Sabbath day, so remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. You go back to Genesis and God says, the seventh day is the Sabbath day of the Lord, and we're to keep it holy. And in the commandments is remember the Sabbath day, because it was given already. Now, those laws were long in force, and of course we know that Abraham kept commandments, laws, statutes, and judgments long before they were given to the children of Israel later. So we first look at what is clearly written in the instructions of God. Let's go to Leviticus chapter 11. Leviticus 11, verses 2 and 3. Speak to the children of Israel, saying, these are the animals which you may eat among the animals which are on the earth, among the animals which divide the hooves and have cloven or split hooves and chew the cud, you may eat. Now some claim even today, we were designed and God intended from the beginning that we're vegetarian. That God intended us to eat plants, but because man ate meat, that God changed the laws and said, if you're going to eat meat, I'm going to give you the clean ones and the unclean ones. Again, since when does God change his law to suit what man does? Oh, you changed what I intended. Okay, I'll change my law. No, God had a set law and set things that he had in force. Being vegetarian is a personal choice, but equally it is not shouldn't be judgmental of those who eat meat, because God does give clear instructions about these are the animals which you may eat. Now, he says, whatever divides the hoof, having cloven hooves, and having chewing the cud, you may eat. So we see cloven hooves, and you see a cow there chewing the cud. That's what they look like when they chew the cud. That's not a term for most humans. We don't just chew the cud. Now we say chew the fat, but that's a different thing. But chewing the cud. Leviticus 11, verse 4 says, nevertheless, these you shall not eat among those that chew the cud or those that have cloven hooves. The camel, because it chews the cud, but it does not have a cloven hoof. It's unclean to you. Now you look at the hoof of the camel and you say, well, it looks like it has a cloven hoof. No, it has two toes and it has a giant pad on as a foot. It doesn't have a cloven hoof all the way back. It has a giant pad, and that's why they're so good in the sand and why they can move so easily through sand. So they don't have a cloven hoof. They just chew the cud. And God says, that is unclean to you. Goes on in verse 5, it says, the rock hyrax, because it chews the cud and does not have a cloven hoof, it's unclean to you. The hare, because it chews the cud but does not have cloven hoofs, it's unclean to you. Now, we look at the rock hyrax as what they call a rock rabbit or a rock badger or a coney. Now, you see what a coney looks like, and we know what a rock rabbit or what they call rock rabbit is, a badger. We're not to eat badgers. I don't think anybody here has tried. I've never heard of anybody else eating a badger, but there are. I watch wilderness survival skills shows, and you watch them eat some of the most disgusting things or animals that most of us would probably never consider eating, yet they eat them for survival. So next we see other animals that are listed, the squirrel, the rabbit, skunk, possum. It says, because it doesn't chew the cud and doesn't have cloven hooves, it's unclean to you. Now, three of these people do eat quite often. I haven't heard of anybody eating a skunk. But people eat squirrel, rabbit, and possum quite often. And people say, possum's really greasy, but it's got a good flavor. I'll take their word for it, and I'm not going to try that myself. Now, verse 7 goes on and says, and the swine, though it divides the hooves, having cloven hooves, yet it does not chew the cud, it is unclean to you. Now, we're getting a description of things that are clean and unclean, and he says it doesn't chew the cud. Now, this is an example of one in the mud, which is quite often because they love to roll in the mud. Verse 8 says, their flesh you shall not eat, their carcasses shall you not touch, because they are unclean to you. Now, what we've discovered scientifically, and I love how science backs up what Scripture states. Scientifically, it supports why swine or pig's flesh is not good for us. The main reason, and this is from the encyclopedia, is trichinosis. Trichinosis is a parasitic disease caused by eating raw or undercooked pork or wild game that are infected with larvae and species of roundworm. Now, when it says wild game, it doesn't mean deer and elk and those things that chew the cud. It's animals that are in the wilderness who have the same processes similar to the pig. This is from Yahoo Answers. Diseases that are caused by pork in detail. The following list shows germs and parasites that are found in pork and some diseases that are caused by them. Many of these diseases are contagious, while some are proven fatal. Parasitic diseases, such as a trichinea worm, is the most common dangerous parasite to man. It causes rheumatism and muscular pain. The infected person shows no symptoms or little symptom, and they recover very slowly. It's a very slow thing that happens to the body. And some are reduced to permanent invalids, and no one is immune from this disease, and there is no cure for people who eat pork. It says the pork tapeworm. The worm causes malnutrition of a person, leading to anemia, diarrhea, and extreme depression and melancholy and a digestive disturbances. The larvae enter the bloodstream and then settle down in one or more of the vital organs of the body, the brain, liver, lungs, or spinal cord, and then they grow to encapsulate and put pressure on the remaining system, and then it causes dangerous disease. Third is roundworms, which may lead to digestive disturbances, appendicitis, or obstructive jaundice, hookworms, and all of these are found in what is described as pork. The hookworms may lead to anemia, oedemia, heart failure, retarded growth, both mentally and physically, tuberculosis, and typhoid. The next one is digestive disturbances leading to persistent diarrhea or oedemia. The next is liver enlargement and jaundice. Then it goes on to describe the fats that are in pigs. Pork contains more fat than other meats, therefore people who are fond of pork are more obese than others. It drives cholesterol higher in their bloodstream and making them more prone to cardiovascular accidents and death. Other diseases that are caused, the flesh of the pork is hard to digest and may lead to chronic digestive disturbances. Pimples, boils, and cysts are common among pork eaters. These are some of the parasites and diseases found in pork or in the skin of pigs, and certainly there are many more. There is still no means of killing these parasites in the tissues, neither has anyone found any method of expelling them, even produced any specific treatment for these diseases. It also goes on to say, and I didn't know this and I haven't tried it yet, if you pour Coca-Cola or Coke on a slab of pork, wait a while and you'll see the worms crawl out of it. I guess they don't like Coke. God knew when he created the pig, it was created for a purpose. Now, it's not that pigs are bad. There are a lot of things that pigs do that are good for the environment, and what they do and what God designed them to do is to eat the trash and eat the filth and get rid of things through their systems. But God knew why he created them. They're scavengers, much like shrimp, lobsters, vultures, people love fried shrimp and all those things, but when you see what they do and you watch them in action, they're little, what do they call those vacuum cleaners now that go around the house? They clean up all the floor of the ocean and suck up all the disgusting things that are on the bottom of the ocean. That's what shrimp, lobsters do, and vultures are there to also clean up. Now, pigs are known to be able to resist even snake bites, even poisonous snakes as rattlesnakes. When the early settlers were coming across the United States, they came into areas of Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas, where there were rattlesnakes, and they were wanting to settle, but the rattlesnake population was so bad, and they found that the pigs were not affected by the rattlesnake bites. And they sent the pigs in, and the pigs actually killed and ate the rattlesnakes and got rid of that problem. But their bodies are designed to be able to take on poisons and toxins and those things, but it doesn't leave their body. So when we eat them, we get all those poisons and toxins and other things that are in their system. Now, some will say, well, I ate pork and I didn't die. I didn't get sick. I remember growing up in the church, and I was in the church since I was four, and accidentally had pork at school one day. And not eating pork, this was in junior high, not having eaten pork for years, I actually, because it hasn't been in my system, it made me sick. I think it made me just as sick mentally knowing that I ate pork, though. It was in my system. But there are reasons that God tells us not to eat these unclean animals. And science has discovered many of those things that go with it. So some will say, well, I ate pork and didn't die. Well, as it says in the description of some of these diseases, you don't know you have it, and it's long-term. And when you take arsenic in small portions, you don't feel the effects of it until it's built up into your system to the point then it takes your life. So you don't want to wait over a long period of time to find out that something's bad for you. God says it is not good for you. Now we move on to the waters. Go to verse 9. It says, you may eat of all that are in the water, whether whatsoever in the water has fins and scales, whether in the seas or the rivers, that you may eat. So I said, here are the fish that you can eat. Barracuda, bass, trout. He said, if it has fins and it has scales. Now I put barracuda up there because most people go, we can eat barracuda? It has fins and scales. I did a major research on it years ago, and I ran it by Ralph Levy, and he goes, I've never been asked about barracuda. And he did his research and got back with me. He said, by all definition, it meets those things. And I've had people tell me, but it eats other fish. The one in the middle here, the bass. I've seen bass jump out of the water and eat birds. And when you clean bass, you find other fish inside them. You find frogs. But they're clean. They have fins and scales. And again, barracuda does as well. So when we're looking at the clean fish, there's a description that God gives. He said they have to have fins and scales. Now, there's a lot of things out there that don't have fins and scales. There's a site called letsfindout.com, and it is, what do scales do on a fish? Because I didn't want to know just why. Okay, skins, if it has fins and it has scales, then it's clean. Well, why? What is it about those? And scientifically, what is it that gives them the ability to make it edible for us? The scales act as a protective layer so that harmful objects, fungus, and bacteria and parasites cannot enter the fish's body. Fish that don't have scales, like catfish, they have that rubbery skin. Fungus and bacteria can absorb right into the body, and it stays within the flesh of the meat. Those with scales, it's almost like a shield of protection around the fish, and God designed it that way. So secondly, they are there for smoothness. They're able to swim through the water, and it helps them in moving through the water. Verse 10 says, but all that are in the seas or in the rivers that do not have fins or scales, and all that move in the water, any living thing which is in the water, they are an abomination to you. He said, you don't eat them. But he goes beyond that. He said, it's an abomination to you. He says that they may be an abomination to you, and you shall not eat their flesh, but you shall regard their carcasses as an abomination. Whatever is in the water that does not have fins or scales shall be an abomination to you. And we're talking about ingesting it or eating it. Not that we can not swim through the water and see an octopus. We don't go, oh, abomination, I got to get away from it. No, it's talking about ingesting or eating. It is an abomination to you. They shall be an abomination to you, shall not eat their flesh or their carcasses. And then in verse 12 again, whatever's in the water that does not have fins or scales, that shall be an abomination to you. Repeats it. So I got a slide of some of what God calls abominations. Crab, and people love crab meat, and that may not be the type of crab that they eat, but not eating crab, I grabbed a crab photo. And I went through and I grabbed the photos that I needed that were all free and clear, so I can continue. We can actually post these online for those who are online with us. Lobster. I remember when my kids were little, we went through the grocery store and they had a tank. And my daughter goes, ew, a bug. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty much what it is. It's a swimming bug, a swimming vacuum cleaner. I have shrimp. Those little guys that take care of all that and are cooked in many, many different ways and eaten today. Catfish. Again, that rubbery skin. And clams or mussels. Again, it doesn't have fins and scales and doesn't swim through the water. There's so many things that God lists that he says these are an abomination to you are some of the what's considered today the high-end foods, the rich foods, all of those things that people say that they love to eat. So he gives us a list of these abominations. Now we go to the air. Verse 13 says, these you shall regard as an abomination to you among the birds. They shall not be eaten. They are an abomination. The eagle, the vulture, the buzzard, the kite, the falcon after its kind, and every raven after its kind. So why does God give a list of these birds that cannot be eaten? Well, here's a picture of vultures, and they have the same job as the lobster and the shrimp in the ocean of cleaning up debris, things that are foul, all the leftover things that are left on the earth. They clean those things up. They're scavengers. Verse 16 says, the ostrich, the short-eared owl, the seagull, the hawk after its kind, the little owl, the fisher owl, and the screech owl. It says, in case you get confused of what type of owl, you just avoid eating the owls. The white owl, the jackdaw, and the carrion vulture, the stork, the heron after its kind, and the hoopoe, and the bat. So it says, don't eat a bat. Now most people go, oh, I wouldn't want to eat a bat. There's people who go, oh, bats are delectable. They're so good. And they fry them and put them on sticks in some countries. So we're not to eat bats. These are birds that God says they are an abomination to eat. There are other things that are in the air and on the ground that aren't a part of what we've covered so far, and that is insects. So what about insects? John the Baptist liked his with honey. We know that. You think, well, how do we know that insects are good to eat? Mark 1:6 says, John was clothed in camel's hair and had a leather belt about his waist, and he ate locusts and wild honey. Some people say, well, we can't eat locusts. Well, let's look at verse 20. It says, of all the flying things that creep on all fours, they shall be an abomination to you. Yet these you may eat. Now, again, if we take Scripture, we can go to verse 20 and say, well, all the flying things that creep on all fours, we can't eat it. We can't eat insects. But we have to read verse 21. These you may eat, of every flying insect that creeps on all fours, those which have jointed legs above their feet, which help them leap on the earth. These you may eat, the locust after its kind, the destroying locust after its kind, the cricket after its kind, and the grasshopper after its kind. Now, here's a cricket, or a grasshopper, and a plate of fried grasshoppers. God says the grasshopper, because it has this joint above the foot, and it jumps on the earth, and having four legs, is clean to eat. this is one of those things that if you're ever trapped in the wilderness and you need food and you don't want to eat a badger, you find a grasshopper. I think I would probably rather start with a grasshopper anyway. But God says grasshoppers can be eaten. It says, but all in verse 23, of all the other flying insects which have 4 feet, they shall be an abomination to you. Now, verse 24 says, by these you shall become unclean. He said, if you eat unclean things, in this case, unclean insects, you shall be unclean. Whatever touches the carcass of a dead body of any of them, they shall be unclean until the evening. And whoever carries part of the carcass on any of them shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the evening. And unless we forget, he describes in verse 26, the carcass or the dead body of any animal which divides the hoof, but is not cloven or does not chew the cud, it's unclean to you. And everyone who touches it shall be unclean. And whatever goes on its paws among those kinds of animals that go on all fours, they are unclean to you. Whoever touches any such carcass shall be unclean until the evening, and whoever carries away or carries any such carcass or dead body shall wash his hands and be unclean until the evening. It's unclean to you. So it's talking about unclean animals that are dead, and he says you need to wash your hands thoroughly. You need to be cleansed after this. Verse 29, these also shall be unclean to you among the creeping things which creep on the earth. The mole, the mouse, the large lizard after its kind, the gecko, the monitor lizard, the sand reptile, sand lizard, and the chameleon. These are unclean to you among all that creep. Whoever touches them when they are dead shall be unclean until the evening. This simply has to do with sicknesses that come from dead animals, especially dead animals that are unclean because of what remains within their system. Verse 32 says, anything on which any of them falls when they are dead shall be unclean, whether it's an item of wood or clothing or skin or sack, whatever is in them, and by any work that is done, it must be put in water, and it shall be unclean until the evening, and then it shall be clean. Verse 33, any earthen vessel to which any of them falls, you shall break it. So you have something that's unclean, and it dies and falls into, let's say, your water pitcher or your food bowl that you eat out of. It says, you shall break it, and whatever is in it shall be unclean. In such a vessel, any edible food upon which the water falls shall be unclean, and any drink that may be drunk from it is unclean. We don't want to pick up the diseases and contaminations of unclean animals, and he says, especially after they die. Verse 35, after everything on which part of any such carcass falls shall be unclean, whether it is an oven cooking stove, it shall be broken down, for they are unclean and shall be unclean to you. So if a dead and unclean animal or a creeper in our cooking environment or a kitchen, whatever it touches has to be cleansed or sterilized. Those of you who have been to summer camp realize the camp is in the mountains. And we go in and we find, oh, there's been things crawling in the oven. And we heat the oven, we clean the oven, we remove anything around and clean everything thoroughly so that it is sterilized and ready for food. Verse 36 says, nevertheless, a spring or cistern in which there's plenty of water or moving water shall be clean. But whatever touches any such carcass becomes unclean. So if it falls into moving water, he says, you don't have to go, okay, nobody can ever drink of this moving water again. No, he says it can be cleansed because of the amount of water there, and it dissipates whatever may be involved. Now, what about roadkill? Even if it's a clean animal. Some say, well, if it's a clean animal, you can pick it up and it's still okay to eat. Well, it's not what God says. Verse 39 says, if any animal which you may eat dies, he who touches the carcass will be unclean until the evening. It says, if it died, you don't eat it. Well, wait a minute. It's a clean animal. Why can't I just pick up this dead animal and go process it and have it for food? Well, again, you don't know why it died. It may have died because of disease. It may have died because of an injury, and that injury caused something and it goes through its bloodstream. If you've ever hunted, even just regular hunting, if you wound an animal and it runs and runs and runs and finally dies, the meat's still edible and you know how it died, but it has adrenaline all through the system and the meat is usually tough and has a taste to it, a wild gamey taste, because it's adrenaline that has gone through that animal. So you want a clean shot and to be able to take an animal without having things go through its bloodstream. So verse 39 tells us that we can eat of any of these animals. But you see here a fish or a deer on the side of the road. That's one of the reasons why I stopped taking my deer to processors and started learning how to process my own animals. Because I took a deer in, actually took two in. My stepdad had one and I had two. Took them in and the guy hung them and hung them on these rails and pushed them in. They swung into the cooler area, but he didn't put any tags on it. And I said, "Well, how do I know which ones are mine?" He says, "No, you bring a deer in, you get a deer." And I go, "How do I know I'm not getting a deer that somebody picked up off the side of the road?" And he's like, "Well, I don't think people would do that." I do. I've seen people picking up deer on the side of the road. But you have to be safe. And God says, if you don't know how it died and it is dead on the side of the road, then we're not to eat it. And again, the main reason, we don't know how it died. Some people say, "Well, it got hit by a car. It's laying on the side of the road." I've seen sick animals come out to the side of the road and die. Not necessarily because they're hit by vehicles. But we don't know how an animal died. And God says, if it died and it's dead when you found it, don't eat it. If you shot it and it's dead, well, of course, you know, okay, it's dead, but I know why, and now I'm going to take care of the process of cleaning it the way it should be cleaned. But he tells us not to eat of it. It could have been diseased. It could have been poisoned. It wasn't bled out properly, which God talks about that, and the eating of blood. Verse 40, it says, "Whoever eats of its dead body or carcass shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the evening. He who carries its carcass shall wash his clothes and be unclean." Now, you don't just leave it there and let things, you know, if an animal dies next to your house, you don't go, "Well, it's unclean, I'm not going to touch it." You get it, you remove it, and then you are clean yourself after that and make sure that you're cleansed. Verse 41, "A very creeping thing that creeps on the earth shall be an abomination, and it shall not be eaten. Whatever crawls on its belly, whether it goes on all fours or whatever, or whatever has many feet," if you've ever seen centipedes or millipedes, you don't try to get down and see if they have a little joint above the foot and they can hop. It says, "many feet and the creeping things that are on the earth, you shall not eat of it." And again, it says, "for it is an abomination." So he tells us these things are not to be eaten. They are an abomination. Now we get to the heart of these passages. And again, it's not just a set of laws that God gave the Old Testament Israel and now they're done away with, or Christ came and he did away with these health laws. It's not just a set of laws of what we can eat or not eat. The laws were given to us for a reason, and there's a reason why they're not done away with today. Verse 43 says, "You shall not make yourselves an abomination with any creeping thing that creeps." He says, the reason I'm telling you not to eat things that are abomination to me or an abomination to you is that you yourself do not become an abomination. "Nor shall you make yourselves unclean with them, lest you be defiled by them." He says, I don't want you to become sick. I don't want you to become full of disease and these things, that you take on that abomination and that you're defiled by them. So why all of these laws of animals, birds, fish, and flying things, and insects? Why all of these laws that God gave to us? God did not want us as human beings, and especially as his people, to be unclean. We look at verse 44. God says, "I am the Lord your God. You shall therefore consecrate yourselves, and you shall be holy, for I am holy." It's interesting when you're looking at the description of what you can eat, what you can't eat. He says, don't become unclean. He says, I am holy and I want you to be holy. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any creeping thing that creeps on the earth. The word consecrate is a word that means sanctify or set apart. He says, set yourselves apart and be holy, for I am holy. Now, set ourselves apart from what? From others who just eat whatever is out there and whatever defiles an individual. Whatever physically God says you're not to eat, then he says, set yourselves apart from that and be holy. He says in verse 45, for I am the Lord who brings you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. The health laws that God gave to us were not just a set of laws of, okay, here's what you can and can't eat, or this one might make you sick. He said, I'm giving you laws so that you are holy, you're healthy, you're set apart, you're following my commands of what to do and what not to do. And because of this relationship with me, he said, you are to be holy as I am holy. Verse 46 tells us, and this is where I got my title, this is the law of the animals and of the birds and every living creature that moves in the waters and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. I thought that one would be a little bit too long. But he says, this is the law. He said, this is a law that is in force and that he put in force. And he said, of every creeping thing on the earth, verse 47, to distinguish between the unclean and the clean, and between the animals that may be eaten and the animals, he says, that may not be eaten. There's more to that, and when we look at the descriptions that God gives to us and even New Testament implications, the whole purpose was to point out that God wanted us to be holy. And as we find out later in Peter's vision of looking back at all these animals, oh, you can have whatever you want. He said, not so. He said, not to call any man unclean, because God wants us to become holy as he is holy.